B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Chino from the Deftones is up first today with their new record, Alms, out for a couple weeks. What does it feel like to drop a new album? How is it working with Sergio, and what does he bring to the table as far as the songwriting process is concerned?
Honestly, you know, we didn't know where it was going to go. Like, him coming in, we didn't think, oh, well, this is going to automatically work or not, or, you know, that we were going to continue making, what is it now, 4 records since he joined.
He told me why this record took a little bit longer to make and why there's no special guests on it. Then we switched gears to Eddie Van Halen and his thoughts on the late guitar player.
I didn't really recognize how great they were, or, you know, just listen to them until I got a little older.
Oh, and by the way, the Deftones have their own IPA, and Chino likes a beer or two, and I kind of stumped him with this question.
Wow, that's a good question. There's been a few other musicians that I've shared some bottles of beer with.
Then Pat Simmons from the Doobie Brothers joins us. We talk about their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yes, while they're all still alive.
Still around to, you know, be inducted and to get inducted, period.
Of course, being a guitar player, he gave me his thoughts on the passing of Eddie Van Halen as well.
He took music in a direction that I don't think anybody had anticipated in terms of virtuosity as a rock musician.
Chino from the Deftones and Pat Simmons from the Doobie Brothers are my guests today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Chino from the Deftones coming up first, and then Pat Simmons from the Doobie Brothers is going to be bringing up the rear, so to speak, as those guys get inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they've got a new box set out, which we'll tell you about more of coming up here in just a bit. Let's start with Chino. I'll tell you what, this Alms record is out right now, and we talk about the record, we talk about the making of it. We got some talk about vinyl, too. I didn't realize that Chino was such a record collector, but apparently he is, so we'll talk about that. And in both these interviews, I ask both these guys on different, you know, sides of the rock and roll spectrum about the passing of Eddie Van Halen. And both of them have a different perspective, obviously, as Pat was there in the early 70s with the Doobie Brothers and saw a young Eddie Van Halen storm onto the scene. And Chino, on the other end, of course, became a rocker in the 90s as far as the Deftones are concerned in the early 1990s. And, you know, Eddie Van Halen was already established by then. So it's kind of a cool way to look at the passing of Eddie Van Halen from two guys on different sides of the rock and roll spectrum. In the meantime, we'll start with Chino. First question I had for him was, what is it like to drop a new record?
Oh, it's good, man. We're super excited. We've been working on it for a while. So, for it to be out and to have people hear it and for the most part liking it, we're stoked.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how come, what was the not the delay, but why did you guys take so much time making this record?
I mean, it's kind of just a vibe. I think we've been on for a little bit. Just, you know, there's no rush to really, especially right now, but I mean, in general, just like, to rush out a record for the sake of doing it, it just doesn't really, you know, appease to us. I guess the way that we work is sort of more of an organic experience where we get together and we play, we jam, and, you know, just try not to force it, just like enjoy our time together. Obviously we don't get to see each other as much as we, you know, as we should. We all live in different states, kind of spread across the US. So when we get together, it's like, we have to plan it. And then we get together and, you know, we try to make it as organic as possible, I would say. You know, it's not like we're kids anymore, like in the garage, like, you know, down the street from each other. So we just try to really, like, I guess, just enjoy the time that we have and you know, and that's really the main goal, I think, when we go in there.
So when you guys go in there, do you actually go in there with just a clean, empty slate and you don't bring any preconceived ideas with you?
Pretty much. I mean, I think there's a couple, maybe two or three things on the record that sort of were demoed in like demo versions where, you know, somebody sent it out to someone else and, you know, some of that stuff lived, some of it didn't. You know, for the most part though, it's kind of one of those things where we all get in the same room and start reacting to one another. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the writing process, how has Sergio like found a place in the band and maybe helped with the writing process as well?
Oh, he's been a savior. I mean, you know, honestly, you know, when she had his accident and we were sort of left, you know, kind of uncertain about what the future of the band was, him coming in and kind of just sliding in and you know, obviously we had a previous relationship with him. We've known him for many, many years. So it wasn't like a real learning curve of what, you know, what it was to work with someone else. You know, he's very much just fit in very well. And he brings a lot. I mean, he's very creative for one. You know, we're all fans of the music he's made with his other projects and stuff. So, yeah, it seemed like a really, really great fit. And, you know, he's an awesome person. Beyond that. So, yeah, it's been great.
I would just guess, looking from the outside in, and it's just me surmising, is that you guys are like five legs of a table, and he was just trying to be one of those legs to help prop the rest of you guys up for a little while until you could get your feet back underneath you.
I think so. I mean, honestly, you know, we didn't know where it was going to go. Like, him coming in, we didn't think, oh, well, this is going to automatically work or not, or, you know, that we were going to continue making, what is it now, four records since he joined. So, yeah. So yeah, it's been something that's, you know, not completely expected, but you know, it's been working, and we're very lucky to have him.
So when somebody puts Ohms on the turntable or downloads it or whatever the case is, what do you think might stick out to some people, or what do you want them to pick up off the record?
Well, I think the record as a whole is something that I think is important to us. We making a record, we try to look at it like as a batch of songs, and as opposed to just like singles, or you know, we really try to build the sequence, the record, and build it as a full listening experience from beginning to end. So hopefully when they put it on, you know, they can set aside the time to actually listen to it in its entirety. I think that's the way, you know, we intended for people to hear it. So you know, to pick one thing off of it that you know, I think it's hard, because I think every song sort of complements, you know, the song next to it, and it's sort of like a ride from beginning to end, I feel.
Yeah, as the kids nowadays would say, you're kind of old school in that fashion, like me, where you want to put it on, start at the beginning, and keep going.
Right. Yeah.
Do you need a food menu or anything, sir?
Hold on real quick.
Yep.
Sorry,
food
what?
Menu or anything?
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Here's just the drink.
Oh, thank you.
You want to order a dessert for me or something?
I know. Right. No, I just had a cafe up the street. I was I had to go to the eye doctor this morning because I got something in my eye yesterday. I don't know what, but so I was on my way back from the eye doctor, and then I noticed it was time for me to call in, so I was like, oh, I'm just gonna stop at this little cafe right here. So
yeah, no problem.
I'm good
at all.
I'm situated.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. So anyways, as we were talking about the record and stuff, it is cool how like the record does kind of flow and stuff, and like you say, you're kind of old school like that, and I guess that's part of the process of listening to songs. And I suppose you're probably like the same like me, where you put records on and you want to listen to them from start to finish, not scrambled all over the place and then you just, you know, any different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, like you said, we kind of grew up in that, with that mentality, and, you know, listening to albums as actual albums. And so that's something that, you know, I still enjoy doing. I mean, I spend a lot of time, you know, if it's my free time, I'll go down to my studio and I'll, you know, I have the idea that I'm going to go down there and start working on some music or writing. And I end up just putting on a record usually, and then sort of get drawn into it. And that's a great experience, something that I've loved since I was a kid, and I still enjoy. So when we make records, we, you know, we try to go in with that same sort of, you know, mentality, hoping that we're making something that has that, you know, that has that thing to it.
Now, one of my favorite things in the past with you guys was when you guys worked with Jerry Cantrell. Was there talk of any guests on this record or no?
Not necessarily. Usually when we have had guests on the records, it's always kind of been something that wasn't really planned out. It sort of just happens like in the studio. Like with Cantrell, was the song was written, the song was there, and there was this sort of, you know, gap or little kind of, I guess, like hole in the song where usually like maybe a guitar solo would go. And we've never really had guitar solos in our music, not because we didn't want to, but just none of us really play that style of guitar. Mm-hmm. And Jerry is a friend, and I sent him a text, and he's like, yo, send it over, let me see. And I literally sent him the demo of it, of what we had so far, and he sent it back, like, I think it was like later in that evening with an idea over it. And I was, you know, and when you hear something with his style of guitar, I mean, it's just like his voice, you know, it's just unmistakably him. And so we were just like, yeah, it's, you know, it sounds like a Deftones song. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, Allison Chains just pops, you know, rears his head in the middle of the song. So it was really cool to have him, you know, to be part of that, having to be part of that.
That is so true, because that record, it sounds completely different from anything that's on that album, and it's because of Jerry's guitar work. And it's like, you know, you wouldn't think it would have that much of an effect, but it really does.
Yeah, I mean his, you know, not I mean his guitar playing, but his voice as well. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, I mean obviously a lot of people know that Lane is no longer in the band, but like, you know, when you hear one of even one of their newer songs, Jerry's voice is so prominent. Like, you know, from the old, it reminds you like how much how prominent his vocals were, even on the you know on the older records, because, you know, that sound, the timbre, voice, everything is sort of like, you know, and his harmonies as well. For sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's very, very distinctive.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people people know now who was the real brains behind Alice in Chains after all these years. But you just mentioned that you guys don't really like do guitar solos and stuff. You know, just a quick thought about Eddie Van Halen and his passing. When I was supposed to talk to you at first, obviously that wasn't announced yet. But you know, did Eddie or the band Van Halen play any influence on you growing up?
You know, I didn't really recognize how great they were, or, you know, just listen to them until I got a little older. I obviously heard, you know, their singles and stuff growing up in the 80s, but and then I wasn't really too into the Van or to the Sammy Hagar kind of era of it.
Uh-huh.
But I went back and I listened to like albums like Fair Warning and you know, some of the older records, and they sound so good. The production, like Ted Templeman likes production, and just the sound of like how warm and heavy those records are, like really, 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 really great. So yeah, it wasn't until later on, like, you know, maybe in my even late 20s, 30s that I really like started getting into them, but obviously love them, and, you know, obviously a huge loss to music.
Yeah. So you guys have a lot of things going on, obviously, outside of not touring and whatnot, but you guys have your beer and everything. Now, are you like a beer expert, or like do you like to drink different kinds of beer? I don't really know you in that way. So yeah. Are you a big beer guy?
I would say I'm a beer drinking expert.
Okay.
and that's kind of honestly like the whole reason why I think, you know, we started doing. I mean, I've been into like it's a whole craft beer scene probably for a good, I don't know, 7-8 years now. Obviously grew up drinking, you know, cheap beer.
Right.
like when we were younger, I don't want to say kids, but when we were younger, quote unquote, old enough to drink, you know, it was more like a quantity over quality. But as you get older, obviously just, you know, developing a deeper palate, I guess, for a different, you know, profiles and stuff. So I've been into it for a while, and the idea came up for us to sort of to work with this company Belching Beaver, and they were super engaged in the process, and they got me, like, you know, they involved me, you know, in the process of developing the flavors and everything, and I really, really enjoyed doing it. And I think that was maybe 5 years ago now or so. It's been 4 or 5 years ago. It's been a while since we started you know, collaborating with them, and you know, every, you know, year, half a year, we're putting something new out, and it's really, really fun.
So outside of your White Pony double dry, is that what it is, hopped IPA, what other rockers beers have you liked, like, you know, Iron Maiden and Megadeth and Motorhead and all these bands have beers. Have you tried some of the other ones?
I tried the Iron Maiden one, the Trooper. I tried that, whatever, and it's more like a, you know, like a, I think it's more like a Pilsner, or like a, you know, like a old school, like German style lager or whatever. And that's good. But obviously I'm very much into like more very hoppy, like a IPA sort of, that's kind of what I've drawn to. And there's a few, I mean, Mastodon has made some great stuff as far as other bands. And you know, just, I kind of follow different breweries like they are bands in a way, you know what I mean? if I go to a different, like even when I'm on tour, especially, or when we were on tour, you know, that would kind of be my thing. I'd get into town. I mean, you know, get into town in the morning, get off the bus, I'd get on my bike, and I'd just like find different breweries and go ride around, especially like stuff that's local, and find different things. And this, you know, and, you know, then same with record stores, like that's sort of like my hobby, you know? So.
Yeah. Do you collect vinyl?
I do. I have a pretty extensive collection that I've been curating since, since I was probably like a early teen.
Yeah, Johnny Chow from Stone Sour got me into it about 3.5 years ago. And now I'm like a maniac. And I actually walked into a record store yesterday, and I walked out without even buying a record. That might be the first time I've ever done that. I was like, I couldn't believe it. It's hard to do that.
You know what, though? I've done that before. Sometimes I'll walk into, like, you know, let's say Amoeba or something like that. And I get, like, I sort of get sometimes if I go in there, especially if I don't make a list or I don't whatever, I'll sort of get anxiety because there's so much to look at. And then I'll kind of like my heart starts beating fast. And I like, I don't know. Really, it's crazy because there's so, like, I mean, that's a huge record store. But like, yeah, there's so much to look at. And I'll just like, I don't have the time. I'll freak myself out, you know, and end up just walking out of the store.
So when you come home from tour, do you have like cases of, you know, peach crates or whatever of records that you bought on tour?
I always do. Yeah. I mean, I usually take like a record bag with me on tour, and then I'll usually fill it up, you know, from just different cities and, you know, picking up different stuff here and there.
All right. So I have a Beatles Butcher album, a Second State one. That's probably the most expensive record I have. What about you?
That's pretty crazy. I don't know if I really have any real expensive records. I mean, I do have a first pressing of Nevermind the Bollocks, Sex Pistols record, which is, I don't know how much it's worth, whatever, but yeah, I have, let's see, just some of the stuff that I have is older. I think I have like a pretty good, Sam Hain record, which is, Glenn Danzig, mm-hmm. from the Misfits and everybody. I think I have, that's pretty rare. I have a couple of like little rare things, but that Butcher, that's like extremely rare. That Beatles record, that's extremely rare.
Yeah.
What did you say it was? It's not the first pressing. What is it?
It was the Second State. So I got the one with the sticker on it, but you can clearly see Ringo's V-neck sweater underneath it. So the First State would be the original cover. The Second State is with the sticker, and the Third State is where someone takes the sticker off.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, but
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I got it for like $8. I just happened to find it somewhere because I knew that there was a talk about it. And one of my friends actually noticed it when I put it on my social media. But I've kind of gone crazy on that. And of course, now I buy all these new records and everything. And it's like, I just love putting on the record. And like you were just talking about, you put the record on and you listen to it the way it was meant to be heard.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, my goal now is like trying to get like my I have two sons who are in their mid-20s now, and they are just as big as record freaks as I am. But I have also have a daughter who just turned 16 actually a couple of days ago. And I'm trying to like, you know, get her into like the whole experience. And so I'll have her go into my studio and, you know, go through the shelves and just go through records. And a lot of times she doesn't know like what it is. And, you know, cause I try to say, come, let's listen to records. You don't have any music I like. And I'm like, you don't know that, you know, you have to. So I'll have her pick something out just by like, I say, just if the cover looks cool to you, just pull it out and then we'll listen to it. And I say, you know, not to overwhelm her, I'll just say, pick two. And then we'll go and we'll listen to it. And that's like, you know, that's what I used to do. I used to go in the record store sometimes and not know what stuff was and just look at the cover and go, wow, I'm curious to hear what this is, you know?
Right, of course. A couple more things here for you. I mean, I could talk to you about records and vinyl all day, but you guys, of course, have the record and all the dots and stuff and the Adopt a Dot campaign. So how's that going? Is that sold out?
I'm not sure. I know it's done very well in the first couple weeks it's been around. And yeah, to me, it's like it's an awesome idea. Sort of a collect, you know, the record label sort of, and within us and our management, we all kind of like brainstormed and think about cool ways to do some charity stuff. And, you know, obviously the two charities are very important to us, which one is the UC Davis Children's Hospital. And the other thing is Crew Nation, which, you know, obviously right now everybody's all the crew,
right.
Are all out of work. There's just no touring. So it's, you know, it's obviously a very important, you know, a thing for us, charity for us. And yeah, it's been really cool, man. I think it's a great way to interact and have people sort of feel part of the actual, not just the music, but even the artwork, you know. And it's been a really neat experience for sure.
And of course, that's a big part of the vinyl experience too, is the artwork. But last thing here for you. So you talk about how you like to, you know, you're a beer connoisseur, a beer drinker. Who do you think is the rock star outside of your band that you've drank the most beer with?
Wow, that's a good question. There's been a few other musicians that I've shared some bottles of beer with. Let me think though. I mean, always the Mastodon guys. I mean, I know I brought them up before about their beer, but like, I mean, we've obviously done some extensive touring with them. And And they're like, you know, the same thing. I wouldn't say it's a quantity thing like I drink the most beer with, but I probably drink the best beers with. Especially Braun, the drummer. He's a pretty big beer connoisseur. So like every time we get together, he'll like have, you know, all right, and I'll save some for, I know when I'm going to see him, like a variety kind of thing. And then it's kind of like, try this, you know? So it's always a fun thing when you meet like-minded people in that world.
Yeah. I'm more of a bourbon, a vodka guy. And I drank a bunch of vodka with Vinnie Paul one night, 'cause that was his thing. Mm-hmm. But, that new Metallica bourbon, I think is actually really good.
I haven't tried it. I need to.
Yeah. And I think that's that's pretty good for sure. Well, Chino, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy your latte or whatever you're getting.
All right. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, good luck on the record, and hopefully we'll see you on the road sometime, maybe next year.
Awesome. Sounds good, man.
Thanks, brother. See you.
All right. See you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Chino from the Deftones today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And now we got Pat Simmons from the Doobie Brothers. They've got a lot of stuff going on. They've got this new Quadio box set, kind of celebrating 50 years. And, of course, heading into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and just a lot of stuff happening as far as the Doobie Brothers are concerned. I was telling someone earlier that I talked with Michael McDonald on the podcast last year, and it was such a fun conversation. And you forget just how much of the culture Michael McDonald is a part of. All those famous backing vocals he did on Steely Dan records, and Christopher Cross. I mean, just a bunch of old songs that he did backing vocals on. He was like, you know, as a matter of fact, he was depicted on Saturday Night Live. And I think we talked about that as well on the podcast. But I know for sure we did talk about when he was his video was displayed on all those TVs in the 40-Year-Old Virgin, and he thought that was really funny. Apparently, he knew somebody that was a part of the writing group of that movie, and they asked him if he would be offended if they did that. And he's like, no, dude, that'd be pretty cool. So, of course, that lives in infamy now on 40-Year-Old Virgin. In the meantime, I was connected with Pat Simmons, and we were off and running today on Talkin' Rock.
I'm very good. Thanks for dialing me in here.
Yeah, no problem. You know, I guess us motorcycle riders have to stick together, right?
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. I rode up to Traverse City, Michigan this weekend. From the time I left my house to the time I got back, 500.0 miles I put on. 500.0.
Wow.
So I got to get out there to the I know that you've been out to the Sturgis and all that stuff in the past, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I got to get out there. My friends are always inviting me to go out there, but I've never been able to get the chance. So what's going on with you guys? Got a lot of stuff in the works. Of course, you were supposed to be inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So are you in it right now, or how does that work?
I think they're having some kind of induction ceremony coming up, you know, more virtual kind of a thing. We did, some recorded acceptance speeches, you know, some of us, and then, you know, they're putting together some kind of little biographical sketch. I think it's going to be more of an abbreviated kind of a show this year as opposed to the long, you know, more extended formats with live playing and so on. There's none of that going on this year, so it'll be remembered in a different way, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Did you guys have anybody that was going to induct you or anybody that was going to play on stage with you already planned out before everything stopped?
No, not really. You know, a lot of that, I think, is, you know, kind of last minute figured out, you know, during the putting together of the live shows, from what I understand. I think, you know, somebody was going to introduce us and we were going to play. Originally it was planned we were going to be the last ones, and then we were going to play Listen to the Music with, you know, whoever was around that wanted to sit in with us. But none of that's happening. We're just you know, doing it how we're doing it, and that's okay. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Gotta accept it.
Yeah, I talked.
We're lucky to be still around to, you know, be inducted and to get inducted, period.
That is true. Yeah, that's true. I had Stone Gossard on my show last week from Pearl Jam, and they were inducted 3 years ago. And I asked him how it feels to wake up every day knowing you're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he said it was pretty remarkable. But I did ask him, since apparently now that you will be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you get a vote. So what bands do you think deserve to be in there with you guys?
Oh, Lord. I don't know who's in and who's not in, to be honest with you. Frampton, I don't think he's in there. He should be in there. I don't know. Who else is? It's like you think somebody has been inducted and they haven't when you go to look at it. It's an odd bunch of people who haven't been inducted. You know, Pete Seeger, I never thought of Pete as a rocker, but,
yeah.
You know. It's not all about rock and roll. Obviously, you know, part of it is just the musical connotations that go along with, you know, music that has been instrumental, no pun, in forming the nucleus of popular music here in America, you see me trying to shy away from your question because I don't know.
You should have a list of who's in and who's not when you're ready to talk to me. So
yeah, I don't even know who.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, there's so much great music that obviously probably has not been included that should be. It's just Pat Benatar was nominated. I don't think she's in this lineup, but obviously Pat should be in it. Neil Giraldo.
Yeah.
There's just endless people that have been nominated and haven't been nominated and will be, you know, inducted eventually. You know it. So.
Now you got Quadio came out the albums and whatnot. That's coming up with of course a great Christmas present for all the Doobie Brothers fans out there. And I also wanted to ask you, of course, about the death of Eddie Van Halen. You guys started way before Eddie Van Halen, but as a guy like yourself, watching Eddie Van Halen come up through, you know, in the late '70s and stuff, did he grab your ear?
Absolutely. I think he was. He took music in a direction that I don't think anybody had anticipated in terms of virtuosity as a rock musician. Everything he did was pretty much, not everything, but the majority of things that he did was, you know, in that, you know, loud, heavy rock guitar direction. He could play anything, you know, acoustically or electrically, but because of his inventiveness, you know, on the guitar, and really I feel like he invented a style of playing that has been as important, you know, as any guitar player ever in rock and roll. You know, I mean, if you listen to, I'll mention a couple people. Yngwie Malmsteen. I don't think he would have been nearly as well known. Steve Vai. I'm not sure he would have been as well known. What's the guy in Toto?
Yeah, Steve Lukather. Yeah.
Again, I feel like, you know, they were all out there. They were all great guitar players. But Eddie Van Halen inspired those guys to go further than they had been going, to incorporate ideas that he came up with into their music. So I, and to me, all the names I mentioned, those are all such amazing players and influential players. And yet they were influenced by Eddie Van Halen. And then, of course, Jimi Hendrix influenced all of them. But I kind of feel like Eddie left a huge footprint that all of us, you know, aspire to, you know, with his hammering techniques, his harmonic techniques, his methods of, you know, bending notes to ridiculous places, you know, beyond what anybody had done before. I just feel like he had a huge influence. I know he did for me. I know he did for countless others. So God bless you, Eddie.
Well, Pat, well said for sure. And thank you so much for the time. I was super excited when I found out you guys are going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I had Michael McDonald on this show back in December. Both of you guys have been just really delightful to talk to. And happy birthday on your birthday coming up. Hope you have a great celebration. When is that? That's this weekend, right?
The 19th. Yeah, I guess it's coming up. Jeez. I quit counting.
Well, Pat, congratulations once again. Have a great birthday, and thank you for the time.
Hey, thank you, Meltdown. Appreciate it.
How cool is that? Another member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame right here on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Talked with us, Stone Gossard, like I said in the interview last week. And if you get a chance, go back and check that out. He thinks Soundgarden deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. No argument from this guy right here. I was thinking about that, too. It's like maybe Alice in Chains, they have to get in there sometime soon. What about Stone Temple Pilots? What about all those bands that put out all those great records back in the early 1990s? All eligible. And we'll probably go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame someday. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, thank you so much for checking out the podcast. We'll do it all over again real soon. I'm on vacation next week. I might see if I can brew up a couple quick interviews here and toss them on for next week. We'll see what happens. But if not, I definitely have some interviews already locked and loaded for when I return around the 26th or so. As always, thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.